Yeah. Okay, well, the monetary transactions are going on for the booksellers.
If people want to grab another cup of coffee or a cup of tea or another drink and take a seat, I think we'll.
Yeah, get back.
Yes?
Sorry.
I'm going to shut up. I'm so getting comfortable there. I'm supposed to keep you comfy. And there I am getting comfy.
Are we?
Thomas has just nipped out for.
Oh, right, okay. We'll wait till he nips back.
Back in.
Who's been tweeting this occasion?
Somebody!
I don't know, I'm asking.
David Lambert, the director of the Centre for Caribbean Studies, has tweeted this event.
Oh, right, okay.
So we should all follow it.
But nobody from actually from here. From
I could Instagram it.
I was impressed. I keep tweeting and doing all sorts of things like this. People say, "Oh my God, you tweeted it." No, I have a blog that tweets.
You mean it automatically?
It automatically
really?
Because I have no idea how to tweet. But everybody, I don't know how many tweet followers.
Well, I have about 3 followers.
So you tweet.
But it's all done by WordPress automatically.
Help your press tweets. Yes, that won't be.
Send it out to the world.
Yeah. Occasionally.
I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
But you're a big
Facebook
person.
I'm a big Facebook
person. Yes.
You I can do it.
Where?
I do it very occasionally. I have no way to know, to measure it as to whether it's effective. All I do it is in order to sell one more book.
What,
I can see that.
Yes.
So you have to gather followers.
I know, it seems to be hard work.
But I don't know, I wouldn't know how to start. I mean, you have to show me how you tweet.
Okay.
Do you have an account?
Do you have an account?
Would she have been a Twitter?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
I think we can avoid it.
Yeah. No. I don't think Phyllis would have tweeted. What a real verb is. Tweeted. I don't even know how to conjugate.
But how did you get an account?
Because I have this blog with WordPress, and all you had to do is just, you know, check a box, and it would automatically send it to whatever you post. Would be sent to
tweet as
Facebook,
well.
LinkedIn, Twitter. You know, it just goes out into the world. So occasionally I get an email
okay.
Says you have been retweeted.
Thomas, you've missed the fact that I've been asked, very kindly asked by Chris to introduce Trish Cook, who is our reader for the poems, and you've missed the fact that the salient fact about Trish is that she's a follower of Facebook. apart from that, Trish is a fellow compatriot of Phyllis Alfred, which is one very important reason why she she is here today, as is our other Dominican, is Kathy McLean. So Trish, a Dominican who, although born here, I always feel that your resonance is all of your heart and soul and spirit are part of Dominica, which comes out so much in her writing as a children's book writer. You may know so much, and her new book, which Papillote Press published, called Look Back, and it is set in Dominica. And Trish is also a playwright and actress, and if you're ever in London at Christmas, she writes the pantomimes for Stratford East. Which was the last one?
Dick
Whittington. So I'm really pleased that she's been able to come here. And you also, when we launched It Falls Into Place, you read at the High Commission. She read the story Breeze, I remember, which is one of my favourites. So it's wonderful that she can read Phyllis Orphrey's poems. And Lisa is just going to sort of say one word about each poem that we've chosen that she can read. So thanks, Trish. Welcome.
So the first poem is While the Young Sleep. This is a poem that Phyllis was very proud of. It's the one that won her that very instrumental second prize in that contest that led to the publication of the Orchid House.
While the young sleep, turbulent striplings, now that you are crouched straight in your narrow beds, your fair limbs flexed, now while the wind howls and the sleet rain drips, scattered our textbooks over which you slouched, dispersed and heartless words that briefly vexed maternal ears, dreaming the youth's soft lips. Calmly at ease, the solitary, kneeling to take your tangled debris in her hands, turns from the window with its threat of storm, withdrawing into herself, at last in feeling she has escaped from heights of your demands into a veil where it is still and warm. Marvellous freedom of a lonely room, treasures at hand's reach dormant, all the past in the slow downsweep of a silver brush through burnished hair. Banished the lively fume of growth and challenge, now at his languid last comes self-remembrance in delicious hush. Sleep, younglings, sleep. She dreams. You lie quite still, but she is quick with liberated thought, and over all the night broods like a dove. Spent is the effort of the straining will, a yielding softness reigns. Shy bliss is caught and rests in fancy in the arms of love.
The next one is The White Lady. This is the one inspired by the statue of Josephine in the savannah in for the France. And this fascination with Josephine and her fate and her imperial fate, Phyllis felt very connected to, she named her daughter after all, Josephine, after the Empress. But also, she was very, as you will see from the poem, she was very aware of the whole history of imperialism and racism that was bound to this fascination she had with the Empress, and I think it shines through in this poem.
The White Lady, Martinique. The white ladies walk between the trees, choosing their steps with care so as not to soil their shoes, which are whiter than their faces. For these are the untarnished ones, the wives of officials. We are the trees. We are the silent spies. We know their gowns are imported from Paris and therefore precious. We know that they conceived their children in rooms with the jalousie blinds drawn, the mosquito neck tucked in. We are not jealous of that lovemaking. Happy we are to dig our roots firm into the earth. Happy we are to be brown and strong and lissome. Our children are multiple and all have beauty. We fear not dirt nor age. There was but one we feared, and as she was a queen, she wore an old purple dress and the bees settled on it, and her dark nurse prophesied darkly of power, of love and wars, desertion and death. And the poets turned their eyes away from us to write poems about her, sweet, fluid poems, for she was light and sweet and proud to love. They called her Marie-Joseph Rose, Tache de la Pagerie de Beauharnais, saying the words like music. But he called her Josephine and Fina in the dark of the night. Now are the bees flown. Now is our fear flown. Now we have no rival. She stands among the palms, among the royal palms, whiter than the wives of officials and whiter than Caribbean surf, as white as marble, with her face lifted to the wind, listening to the word Fina in the deep of the night. And the tourists say, her gown is empire.
The next one is Salute. This is one of my favorite poems because it points to a militancy, a political militancy that Phyllis felt very strongly, particularly during the times of her socialist formation. And but also through the this poem for me always recalls her heartbreak at the fall of Barcelona, the disillusionment that it was for her and her friends to see the city collapse and the Franco forces taking, and the whole disillusionment she felt at the lack of action of the British government to try to avert that collapse. So,
salute. Meeting me in the road, he greets me. Comrade, rough music in that word, rude magic, in grip of clenching fist on willing hand. This is our barricade against the tragic, creeping decomposition of our land. Comrade, he says, and by my oath, he says just what he means. We can break bread, blend tears, share work and conflict. Go our different ways, supported through our afternoons and years by certain concord, sprayed a thousandfold, like springtime in the country of the mind. We shall grow old and separate, but find always in roads and lanes and streets and squares echoes of old salutes, rough music and rude magic. Comrades.
The next one, Colonial Committee, I think I mentioned before, was one of my favorite poems of the ones she published in Tribune, and a real testament to Phyllis's commitment to the decolonization movement in the 1940s and 50s.
Colonial Committee. The plushy jungle of the ancient room parts to admit the hunted and the hunter, who, drawn by stress of century and war, greet as old friends with ripe commercial banter. Liners of good will hang from the ceiling, and down those strands the little restless apes of compromise and cavil swing and jabber like dots upon the empire's ticker tapes. Framed on a northern wall, the oily eye of noble lord looks trusty wise upon the olive and mahogany and white of the assembled faces, but no frown. Hints at the terminating trusteeship or at the adolescence too prolonged, for in the civil jungle scarce a snarl or yap of pain attests the deeply wronged. Yet certain members see the phosphorus trail, the orchids hung with scorpions, the agouti which mocking from its palm tops gibbers loud that there are things more urgent than cold duty. And certain members hear the rush of rains in hot, impatient lands and feel the flood surging to make the plushy wilderness a monsoon island in a sea of blood.
The next one is Love for an Island, and this is one of those, dry eye, after reading in Dominica. But my association, what I associate best with this poem is that when Phyllis died, Lennox Hornychurch was determined to give her a kind of state funeral. Funeral that in some way attested to what he thought was her position in Dominica. So he pulled together every force that he could to make that, people march and whatever. He draped her her coffin in the flag of the Federation, for example. But in her funeral service, before the service ended, and then her the coffin was taken to the cemetery, this was the poem that was read at the end of that celebration of her career. And I think fittingly so, because as we can see from her career, what actually pulled her through and pushed her forth always was the love for an island. So.
Love for an island. Love for an island is the sternest passion, pulsing beyond the blood through roots and loam. It overflows the boundary of bedrooms and courses past the fragile walls of home. Those nourished on the sap and milk of beauty, born in its landsite, tremble like a tree at the first footfall of the dread usurper, a carpet-bagging mediocrity. There is no mild attachment, but rapacious craving for a possession rude and whole. Lovers of islands drive their stake, prospecting to run the flag of ego up the pole, sink on the tented ground, hot under azure, plunge in the heat of earth, and smell the stars of the incredible veils. At night, triumphant, they lift their eyes to Venus and to Mars. Their passion drives them to perpetuation. They dig, they plant, they build, and they aspire to the eternal landmark. When they die, the forest covers up their set desire. Salesmen and termites occupy their dwellings. Their legendary politics decay. Yet, they achieve an ultimate memorial. They blend their flesh with the beloved clay.
The next one, Fugitive Hummingbird, is one of the first text that Phyllis wrote when she returned to Dominica to work in politics and found to work with Chris LoBlack in the founding of the Dominican Labour Party, I like it because I think it captures those first moments of re-encounter and the rediscovery of the beauty. And again, it's very much in the tally mode, it's the senses that predominate here.
Fugitive hummingbird. No bird stirs in the aromatic dark. No bird sings, and night wheels hotly on unfeathered wings. With scrape and cark of crickets, frogs, famished pariah dogs, and all the other restless brindled things. Those pricks of stars which dive and cling to bark like lamps aprow, seek lost birds, light only on an owl which has been stark reduced to bones round coal pod stones. Never did hunger pay so dear for fowl. In the accordion pleated palms, doves lately moaned for alms. Now, only the enchanted songless lark, the small one, the fiery flesh finer than beak, hummer and fossa, darting on trapped spark, will rise at dawn as bird from lawn, mistaken for a moth in citrus dark.
The Child's Return is a poem that she wrote to Jean Rhys, for Jean Rhys and to Jean Rhys. Phyllis used to send the Star, her newspaper, to Jean Rhys in the UK, and include short little notes on them. But frequently she wrote about her fears for deforestation in Dominica. She got Jim just turned into a passion over the possibility of logging being undertaken in Dominica before it's cut. But primarily they wrote about Jean's nostalgia for Dominica and Phyllis's trying to convince her to come back. And this is a poem that gathers that exchange between them.
The Child's Return for Jean Rhys. I remember a fair, tall island floating in cobalt paint. The thought of it is a childhood dream torn by a midnight plaint. There are painted ships and rusty ships that pass the island by, and one dark day I'll board a boat when I am ready to die. The timbers will creak and my heart will break, and the sailors will lay my bones on the stiff, rich grass as sharp as spikes by the volcanic storms.
Long Cactus, as I mentioned before, is a poem that she wrote to Robert. It's always been, so I have a lot of affection for this poem because I was always entranced by his fate. This is a man that really supported Phyllis. They had their ins and outs and their moments of near separation and so forth. But he was a companion that was there in support of her political work, ready to take, play second fiddle to her career and so forth. I think he deserved this this homage. He is, as I think of Lone Cactus, this is an Englishman, Oxford educated and whatever, who is now buried in the Carib territory for his commitment to the island itself. I think he deserved this one. Mm-hmm.
Lone cactus, thinker, flowering in desert sands of war, uncrushed by the tanks of violence, springing green against the burning sky and deadly battle. You, oh my gentle, my lover, speak in England with your brave eyes and stubborn patient hands. Oh, I have seen you darken with Abyssinian grief and seen the rage in your eyes lit by those fires of Spain. I have seen your flesh stripped like the torn flesh of India, and I have kissed on your mouth the cries of Jews slain. And so I know that your apartness is but awaiting, your silence the crouch of strength. Your thinking a hope in struggle, yourself the first and last warrior, Lord Cactus thinker, my gentle, my England.
And the last one is my national song. This is part of the Rosso poems. As I said before, Phyllis really used this Rosso persona to dig in a little bit, to kind of express a bit her bitterness, but in a very humorous way, at being expelled from the party that she founded. This was done by during the administration of Edouard Leblanc, who never would speak to me on writing the biography. He's the only person that I sought to speak to who would not speak to me about her or anything else, would just not see me. But this is one example, the one example you have, other than by reading the poems, of what her voice was like as a rose bowl.
My national song. Oh, they've had it too sweet too long, is the theme of my national song. 1 hour in the sun for a fish will spoil the tastiest dish, while a day in an open tin will harden the bread from the bin. When it comes to political man, 10 years is an awful long span, and for most politicians alive, the maximum term should be 5. Does power corrupt and rot? Yes, if you misuse it a lot. Does too much cash undermine the man with the party line? Of course it does, if they grip the line till they sink the ship. The solution is up to you. Sack the captain and change the crew, for they've had it too sweet too long. That's the theme of my national song.
Many thanks, Trish, for those brilliant meetings. That was fantastic. That was really great.
Thank
and thanks to Lisa
lovely.
for the introductions. That was brilliant. I think we've got a kind of have a short break. People can grab a cup of tea and another biscuit and so on, and then we'll move on to the next talk. But if you want to just grab something else to drink while we kind of reconfigure this bit.
Sorry about that.